Hey everyone, this is Melissa, and this is my podcast, Historically Sarcastic. Okay, so I'm a total nerd, and especially when it comes to like history and podcasting. Ironically, I don't listen to history podcasts. I find them all boring and too informative, so I actually listen to true crime. But we're going to try this out. So I decided to combine my two loves and, you know, using some real out-of-the-box thinking, solve my problem, and start my own podcast. I know. So, my lovelies, welcome to my show. Super glad you all can make it. Few things about the show before I hop into the first episode, which I'm super excited about since this is kind of a weird one, but I love it, so whatever. Heads up, I am a student, so school comes first or something according to parental units, but I'm still trying to do this once a week. It's gonna probably be more like twice a month, just kind of depending on my schedule, because, you know, finals and stuff are coming up. I also have an Instagram. It's called historically_sarcastic. Go and follow it. Since I have none so far, I should probably follow it myself. But basically, I'll post history memes and anything else relating to this podcast. And then hopefully, I'm hoping to get a website and it'll just be pictures, I guess, on it, and hopefully merch, who knows? We'll just see how this goes. So, without further ado, welcome to Historically Sarcastic. Cue theme song! Not gonna lie, super proud of that theme song. Cut it myself. So, and the little copyright stuff for that is in the episode description, so I won't get sued. But let's go to the heart of the matter. Today, I'm gonna be talking about the Great Molasses Flood of 1919. If you're anything like me and don't know what that is because the public school system has failed you, have no fear. I did all the Google to educate everyone, including myself. So, let's start off. So this event happened on January 15th, 1919. Wow, gasp, I just said that year. So it just happened right around the time of World War I. You think I would know when the exact ending of World War I is, being a history nerd, but I don't. But I believe it, I know it happens the year 1919, so I'm guessing after January. January seems like an odd time to end a war. I don't know, just a gut feeling, we're going with it. But, wouldn't quote me on any of that. Seriously, do not suggest using me for academic papers of any sorts. I barely use myself. Anyway, so it took place in Boston on the North End and the surrounding neighborhoods, according to the map I am looking at. Where is Boston exactly? Well, it's in the United States. So, wow, big guesser. I'm an American talking about some American history. Surprise, surprise. But where in Boston? I'm gonna have to guess the north part using my detective skills I picked up from watching BBC's Sherlock. We're gonna go with that. For those of you who know Boston or like live in the city or whatever, it's right by the Charlestown Bridge. So maybe that means something to you. If you're like me, it doesn't. I don't live in a cool town. So before I go into the main part of our story, the actual flood, let's do some background so you have context for this. I don't want to leave you like the cat poster and leave you hanging. Haha, I'm hilarious. So in 1914, the world is like, hey, let's all go to war. And we started World War I. Since the U.S. was chilling, we pulled a Switzerland and we're like, nah, do not want to participate. No, thank you. I got my own problemos over here. Like Manifest Destiny. So, heads up on this little next little section. It was kind of late when I wrote this, so who knows how fact-to-fact this is. but whatever. So the U.S. was trading with everyone because we wanted a good economy or something. Who knows what that's like? So I wasn't 100% sure if they were trading like food and like stuff like that, you know, or if they were like, yo, let's make some bombs like we did in World War II. I'm kind of leaning towards the bomb side of things because what I'm about to explain will make about 1,000 times more sense. So we have that. So at the same time, turns out molasses has more than one use. Not only is it used to make gingerbread that is less tasty than expected, not a personal opinion, that is a fact of life. Gingerbread is iffy at best. It's better if you buy it. Learn that. But yeah, I'm sorry, not sorry to those who believe it tastes good or great or love it. You're just wrong as a person. So apparently it has two other main uses though. Not trying to get off too much track. Alcohol and bombs. So with the prohibition about to happen the next year, I'm leaning toward the whole more bomb making thing. Maybe the alcohol is used in bomb making. I don't know. We'll just see how it goes. But I mean, I could be wrong about the bomb making thing too. Heads up, but I'm not. You're listening to me using some form of the internet, and people on the internet are never wrong. So there's that. Since you need many bombs, and you want to help the war by having many bombs and using those many bombs to take out the enemies, we made lots of bombs since, you know, America is run off of corporate greed thanks to capitalism. Which, by the way, I feel like capitalism is like the secret, not so secret drug of America. Like, America's out there like snorting and selling this new drug we call corporate greed. It's a thing. I swear I'm patenting it. No one else can take it. So in 1915, the Purity Distilling Company realizes that they need to have somewhere to contain millions of gallons of their molasses, which, as I read in the article, I learned I was right. They were using the molasses to make military weaponry. Heck yeah, guessed well. Go me. Some brownie points. But back to the story. So they were like, okay, we have all this molasses to store, so what are we going to do with it? Put it in a giant tank. Now, you can think of it like one of two ways. I probably should have like actually Googled images of what this tank looked like. But like, you can think of it like one of those like propane tanks, like the big like white things, but like a really big version. But I like to think of it as like a giant metal bucket. Or I just think it's funnier. Like there's just this like harbor, which I'm assuming it's by a harbor. It looked like it on the map. Like a harbor. And then there's just this giant metal bucket. So, that's just, you know, full of molasses. A lot of gingerbread there. But they use the molasses in military weaponry. So, yeah. So they needed a lot of molasses because there was a lot of military weaponry made and we like money. So they created the tank to fill it with the sugar substance, which apparently is imported from Cuba, the West Indies, and Puerto Rico. Puerto Rico? I don't know, are you supposed to like roll that R? I'm white, so it doesn't matter. I can't Spanish anyways. So yeah, they import from all those places, which I feel like there was some sort of like illegal labor with that, since, you know, historically we've done that in the past. wow. We love Manifest Destiny. So they took this molasses and they turned it into alcohol somehow. Not really sure how that's done. Really should watch like a how it was made kind of thing to figure that one out. But if you really want to know, use the internet. Because I'm not going to tell you. So once it was turned into alcohol, it was sold to the US, France, and England to make bombs. Wow. Okay, we're just going to leave that one there. And again, since this is corporate America, safety precautions are meaningless and basically are supposed to be used as snot rags. Who cares? So the entire project was rushed. Wow. They didn't take a lot of time on this. What a surprise. So they were like, we could have the safety inspected. I don't know if they did. Let's say that they didn't. And then whatever, they get away with it. They do get it safety inspected, bribe the dude. I mean, they probably had to give the guy, like, a lot of money to bribe him. For me, it'd be like, and here's a cheesecake, and I'd be like, yeah, okay. That is more enough. So, the thing was completely not up to code. They basically took the safety precautions and yeeted them off the building, which, for those of you who don't know what yeet means, or yeeted off a building means, basically it's dramatically thrown off a building. So, yeah, that's great. So then they were like, okay, now we have this giant tank made. Again, imagine a giant metal bucket, because it's way more entertaining that way. And they were like, okay, this is what you're supposed to do. You're supposed to fill the entire thing with water, make sure it doesn't leak. And the company was like, hear me out. We don't do that. And we fill it up with, ready for this number? This thing is going to hold 2.3 million gallons of molasses. And this is how much they fill it up with. 6 inches. I know. That's like the amount of water you put in a bathtub when giving a toddler a bath so they don't die. So, you know, 2.3 million gallons of molasses, toddler in a bathtub. Same thing, right? If you can't tell, I am rolling my eyes so hard over here. So, they finished the dumb thing, and they put the molasses in, and surprise, surprise to no one, it leaks. On day one, the flippin' thing leaks. You want to know what they didn't do? You want to guess? Fix it. They did not fix it. No, they were like, slap a Band-Aid on it, and it's good enough. So, now just imagine a giant metal bucket with a single Dora Band-Aid on it, because again, far more entertaining than probably what reality was. So, since I'm reading some fancy science article with a fancy science guy, I'm going to assume it was Bill Nye, because that's the only science guy I really know. And for those of you not from America, go watch an episode of Bill Nye. It will change your life. It will truly change your life. So, fancy science guy, aka Bill Nye, is like, yo, this tank is designed for water. Any basic engineer could have figured that out. But guess what's not in this? Water. It's stored molasses. Well, you know that thing when you go on the internet and you Google it and you see like the first paragraph and you read it and then you don't actually click on a website? Did that about molasses. Apparently, molasses is 1.5 times the density of water, so it's much stronger, more denser. What's the right word for that? It's thicker, I guess, than water. Weighs more. It's not water. It's not. So they were like, that sounds problematic. We don't care. We're making bank. We're smoking cigars. There's some nice girls in flapper dresses. I really don't know what they wore back then. So yeah, they're making bank. Does not matter. Making money, being rich, driving those fancy Ford cars. It's all that matters. So, you know, like, when you make a lot of money and you, like, upgrade things and then you continue making a lot of money, you know, because they're making buckets of cash. Well, instead of fixing it like they could have once they're making buckets of cash, they were like, nah, who cares? Not my life at stake. Whatever. So, we have 3 years later, fast forward, insert a fast forward noise. I'm probably not going to do that later, so, the leaking got so bad that it was a daily occurrence. So deciding that they didn't want to do any costly fixes and that they preferred fancy suits instead, which, I mean, same, I don't even wear suits, but fixing things, fancy suits. Fancy suits tend to win. They came up with an ingenious solution. This is just, man, I want this guy's job. Just, this guy is just a real problem fixer. I mean, I'm assuming he got a huge bonus. He's probably like the guy who names Pixar movies, who got like $300,000 bonus for naming the Cars movie. Cars. I mean, this guy, the Pixar guy and this thing fixing guy, same level of person. Well, he came up with this idea, Mr. Tank Fixer. He decided, hey, it's leaking. We could fix it. It would get expensive. Or we could paint the entire thing the same color as molasses, and no one would ever know. So, I mean, I'm just blown away by this man's problem solving. I mean, I could have come up with that. Not gonna lie. I could have thought of that. I have no degree in anything. I'm still in high school, like, and I could have come up with that. So let's trade places, buddy. But yeah, so that's what they did, and it saved their rich behinds for, like, a year? Question mark? Like, a year? I guess that's a long time, but bruh. Whatever. So, a week before the flood, so now we're fast forwarding to, like, January, let's see, it happened on the 15th, so like a week before would be like January 8th. May not be that exact date, but they said 7 days before. So January 8th, 1919, this big ship comes over and drops, you know, like 500,000 gallons or more of molasses in this tank. Again, you can do like the logical way of like how they probably poured this molasses in. I'm gonna just imagine some storks in like sailor hats just dropping off bags of molasses in this thing. I think it's funnier. Maybe like pitchers full of it. I don't know. Just to your giant metal bucket. Just make this as entertaining as you want, because it's about to get kind of sad. But whatever. Who cares? I certainly do not. So yeah, so they mix all this new molasses with the old molasses. Well, this new molasses was warm, because it came from Cuba, which I heard is quite warm. I would not know. I've never been. And this is Boston in January. So it's like 2 degrees outside. And so they mix the warm with the cold molasses and does some molasses stuff. And, you know, kind of mixes around. Kind of, mingles with each other. Also, this is totally random. Did you know molasses doesn't freeze? Like, just assume molasses would freeze. Huh. Weird. Yeah. Anyways, basically, the two substances mingle, even though they're the same substance. The hot and the cold one mingle, which you think would just make warm. But no, it doesn't do that. According to science, when you mix warm molasses with cold molasses, it creates gas. Who would have thought of that? Not me. Probably why I'm still in high school. So, now we got the warm and the cold molasses, and a ton of gas buildup in a poorly made tank that stores 2.3 million gallons of molasses. And by the way, this thing weighs like 26 million pounds. So, the gas sat there for 7 days. And on the 7th day, the 15th of January 1919, the gas buildup caused so much pressure that the entire tank ruptured. Dun, dun, dun! Again, I like to think of it as that scene from Cloud and Chance and Meatballs where they have the big, like, food hill. By the way, I'm gonna make a couple Cloud and Chance and Meatball references in this episode. You know, the big, like, food hill, and then they have, like, the wall that, like, protects the food hill, and it breaks and all the food comes crashing at them? I like to think of our giant tin bucket that way. So, on January 15th, approximately 12:30, residents of the neighborhood reported a loud grinding and creaking noises, which incidentally happens to be the same sound that my body makes when I get up from binging Netflix for 7 hours. So me and this tin bucket have a lot in common. They also heard scraping noises, which luckily my body has never made. If your body has ever made scraping noises, please call a doctor. Like, now. Like, turn off this podcast and call a doctor, because I don't think that's healthy. So, there was an officer on scene who was making a call, because apparently people had, like, called in with their really advanced telephones. Do they have I think they had telephones back then. We're just going to go with the fact that they had telephones back then. But, like, the really old ones, you know, like the two-part telephones. Top-notch stuff. So they called in. This guy came to check out the scraping noise. And he calls for backup. Wait, what's this guy's name? Oh! Okay, so I love this guy. His name is Frank McManus. So old Frankie boy is on scene. And he decides to make a call to old-timey dispatch. If you know what dispatch is, it's the nice ladies that go, 911, what's your emergency? And then you're, like, screaming into the phone because, like, you thought that you could be, like, the people on Chopped, but instead you, like, chopped off your thumb or something. Not the kind of Chopped you want to be doing. No. So he didn't have a cell phone when he called backup a dispatch, so I'm assuming he went to, like, someone's house who had a phone. Or, like, had a phone box. Wait. Do they have phone boxes back then? Okay. Give me a second. Okay. So, oh wait, I actually have a note about this. Ooh, look at me preparing. Okay, so they didn't have phone boxes. They had something called a call box, which kind of looks like, according to these black and white internet photos I found, like a box with a phone in it, but the box also kind of looks like a fuse box. I don't know what it's supposed to do or what it's supposed to look like, but I call that quality. So, he calls her back up, and good ol' Frank... Right as good old Frank calls for backup, I'll probably not edit that mess out, but enjoy. Once good old Frank calls for backup, the 2.3 billion gallons of molasses comes rushing in his face, which is a lot of molasses, and my brain doesn't comprehend how much molasses that actually is. So if you're like me, and you're like, it's not that much of molasses. Like, I have 2.3 million gallons of molasses sitting in my pantry. Yeah, no. Let's put it reference-wise. It was like 15 to 25 feet tall of molasses rushing at this poor man's face, which is like 1.5 to 2.5 stories, because I think a story is like 10 feet. But yeah, so it's like two stories of molasses rushing at this guy's face. That's terrifying. So, yeah, that's a lot of, stuff coming at you. I don't know how fast it was moving. I mean, how fast can molasses even move? The stuff is so slow. It's kind of like, I'm gonna be killed for this one, but, have you ever seen, like, really old people walk? And I'm not talking, like, people, like, who are, like, old, or, like, and they're, like, their 60s or 70s, like, you're not that old. I mean, I guess you are. You've lived longer than me. You're old. No, I'm talking people who are, like, in their 90s, like, super close to deathbed. If they fall or walk the wrong way, they'll break their hip and die, you know? I'm talking about those old people. Have you ever seen them move? And you're like, when is this gonna end? Molasses is the same way. You're like, well, I'll just go watch, you know, Endgame. Go watch the entire Marvel Cinematic Universe. And then we'll see if it got near the top of the bottle. Which, it didn't. Stuff is super, super slow. And that's nice. So I'm assuming the stuff's coming at you. It's really, really tall. But it's not, like, that fast. Well, if you're like me from 35 seconds ago, you're wrong. This stuff was moving, according to NBC's news article on this, 35 miles an hour. Which is terrifying. And not only that, it's headed to a densely crowded part of town, and anyone in its direct path is swallowed whole. I have zero words for that. Like, you're just minding your own business one day, and then molasses. Hits in the face, and then you're dead. So I thought I had nothing to compare to, but I lied. I'm gonna make another Cloudy Chance of Meatballs reference. You know that scene in Cloudy Chance of Meatballs where they're in like that jello house castle thing, and Sam, the girl, does a cannonball into the jello pool and just hanging out? Like, how does she get out of that? Like, there's no like scraping in the later scenes, so I don't get that. The answer is she didn't. She has a twin sister, and he ends up falling in love with her in that cute scene afterwards, but she didn't. So yeah, like the poor people in this story, she sugar drowned. Sugar drowned a phrase? I don't know. Who knows? It's now copyright. It's not mine. So yeah, within 2 seconds, the first two blocks were covered in this sticky substance. Once you were in, that was it. There was no saving you. And so it busted through hundreds of buildings, taking them out. So it caused pretty much the same amount of destruction that Superman does in any of his movies. You're like, I need to save this kitten from a tree. Sweet, I gotta destroy the entire downtown area of Metropolis or whatever his city is called. So yeah, it was like that. I just took them out, busted up all these buildings, overturned trains, planes, and automobiles. Probably not the plane part. Just really wanted to say that. But who knows? I don't. That's for sure. So yeah, not only did it destroy the city, it killed 21 people. I feel like drowning is a truly terrible way to die. But drowning in molasses? You're gonna die smelling like the stuff in gingerbread. No thank you. So yeah, 21 people died. 151. Wow, I made that number worse. Were injured. So these people were thrown into cars and buildings by the molasses, and some were even crushed, which I don't get. How are you crushed by molasses? I don't know. Science. That's what I'm chalking it up to. Science. Plus, there were horses that were killed. This is where it got me. Like, people, but there were horses that were killed. So, this one really, really gets me. I'm reading this article on this, and this is what, happened to these horses that were, just chilling in the streets like they do. It's kind of what Boston's known for, horses chilling in their streets. Anyways, this is the quote about the horses. So it compared, not the quote, a interpretation of the quote. Yep, we're going to go with that. It essentially said, it compared the horses and the molasses to flies on the sticky paper stuff that you hang from the ceiling in the summer. So, yeah, I'm gonna have, trauma now every time I look at one of those. I'll be like, oh, look, there's the fly. Oh, it's called fly tape. There's the fly tape. And they'll be like, horses and molasses. And I'll start crying. My mom's like, what's wrong? I'm like, those poor horses. You know, like you tend to do. So, those poor horses, and I guess humans too. I gotta say the human thing, or someone's gonna, angrily comment, and I don't know if I can handle that. Not gonna lie. So, again, this thing was pretty fast-moving. Still not sure how it's impossible. Gonna blame it on inertia. Learn that from Bill Nye. Top-notch education right here. So yeah. If you're really sciencey and you want to explain it to me, DM me on Instagram or something and explain it. But until then, I'm blaming inertia. It's a property of matter. Bill Nye, the science guy. You're welcome. So as the day went on, the molasses began to harden due to cold temperatures, which made it even harder. Get it? It was a pun. Okay, I just paused to let you guys laugh, but if you didn't, there's just this awkward pause there for no apparent reason. So, but it did make the rescue and cleanup effort more difficult. I don't know if you ever tried to clean up molasses. It's like cleaning up glitter. It's not gonna happen. You might as well just burn your house down and move. But yeah, so let me tell you about molasses for my two failed gingerbread making attempts, okay? It sucks. So the first time I did it, I used a metal spoon, and it took 3 hours and my entire soul and will to live to do it and get the stuff off the spoon. So the next time I did it, I just used this plastic spoon so I could throw it away and not deal with that. Because it ain't coming off. It's like when you let a young kid on YouTube. It's not happening. You can never remove it. So, it's impossible. So, yeah, if you're ever cooking with molasses and you use a metal spoon, just throw it away and buy a new one. It's so much more worth it to do it that way. Life lesson. Cooking lesson by Melissa. You're welcome. Back to the story. Sorry, I tangented. Okay, cool. So, yeah. It's hardening. They hate it. It's making things more difficult, which I don't get. I feel like once it hardens, it will turn to amber. And then you could use a jackhammer or something if they had jackhammers back then. I'm not really sure. I mean, I'm not a first responder. It's not my job to save other people's lives. I'm just trying to make it through life myself. Oh, wait. Didn't they say earlier that molasses doesn't freeze? So maybe it wouldn't harden, it would just get more like a soft caramel-like, maybe? Because that would suck. I would rather be dealing with, like, a syrupy substance than, like, a soft caramel. I don't know. Science. So, yeah. If you guys want to do some cool internet Googling of photos of this, you can actually see photos of the firemen on ladders using them almost like a walkway so they don't get stuck themselves. Kind of random. I guess kind of applicable because it is this story. I just thought they looked really cool. Yeah. So, after this all went down, naturally people were pretty peeved off about this. Their friends and family were injured and killed by this stuff. And being the Americans they were, they did what I feel like is an American trend nowadays. They decided to sue. They sued, and they sued hard. And in only a matter of days, 120 lawsuits were filed against Purity Distilling Company and its parent company. Ready for this? The U.S. government. Yeah, that's right. The U.S. government. Go America. Really did not want to be either of those companies. So the lawsuit lasted 6 years and had over 3,000 witnesses. I have a few things to say on this. One, poor jury. Like, they had to do all the boring jury stuff for 6 years. The 3 hours you were called in for jury duty is bad enough. But 6 years? Like, at that point, I would just, like, fake my death. I'm not gonna lie. I'd be like, peace out, U.S. government. You're guilty. I'm now dead. And I'm gonna go spend the rest of my life in South America running sketchy business deals. You know, or something. Totally not worth being on a jury for that long. Like, what do you even get out of that? Being like, I was on this 6-year jury. And I found this company and the U.S. government guilty for something they obviously did. No, there's no benefit. Free sandwiches maybe for lunch? I don't know. I don't care. Go fake your death. Don't be on jury duty for 6 years. And if someone asked you to be on jury duty for 6 years, they want to see you go insane. Like, do not trust that person, ever. Number two, 3,000 witnesses? Okay, like, how do the prosecutors and defense have time to round up 3,000 witnesses? Like, is that a thing for trials? I listen to true crime. I should know this. No, it's not a thing. The end. Like, was that what they were doing for 6 years? I've been alive, like, how many years? 1, 2, 3. No, it's been more. I've been alive for more than 6. I'm not that smart. And you know what? I know, like, what? Like, 1, 2, my mom counts. I guess I can count that teacher. I know, like, 30 people, okay? Like, that's, like, a fraction. Like, a hundredth? Hundredth? I think it's, like, a hundredth. I don't know. I don't do math. It's a lot less than 3,000 people. 3,000! Just mind-blowing. How did you try? I'm just gonna leave that there so I don't stew upon this for so much longer. So anyways, after these 6 years are up, which is 1926, according to the article I'm using, which, by the way, linking all my sources in the show notes so I can't be accused of plagiarizing. Wow, that was hot. Okay. Anyways, the jury rules that the big bad company slash government is guilty and they need to pay up. Again, I feel like we could have done that in a week. You know, like, two people be like, yeah, city's destroyed. The end. And they'd be like, yeah, that makes sense. So, for those of you who are like, wow, nice first episode. There's a ton of death in it. Don't worry. There's a happy spot in all of this. I wouldn't just be like, and a bunch of people died. The end. Moving on. No, that is for when I have you hooked on the show and you're secretly in love with me and who I am as a person. And, yeah, then I'll just start doing all the murder stuff. Not really. I have a few ideas, though. May or may not have a witch trials stuff happening. So stay tuned for that, because it's going to be great. Anyways, there is a bright spot in this, though, needless to say. And since I found this quote from Pacific Standard Magazine, which I didn't know existed, they had a quote in the article they had about this, and I really, really liked it. So I'm going to steal it. Shout out to my one friend who I know is listening because I told her she has to. Gonna steal like an artist. So, if you don't know what that means, neither do I. But basically, the quote reads, It marked the beginning of the end of an era where big business faced no government restrictions on its activities and no consequences. So basically, this was the start of holding governments responsible for destroying everything. Which I feel like we really still don't do, but who knows? I'm not in politics. Not my problem. So, yeah. Luckily for everyone involved, I guess except for the people who died and those horses, actual restrictions were put into place so this wouldn't happen again. Yay. And in the end, that section of Boston smelled like molasses for years to come. Bakeries must really do well in that area. So, yeah. Before I end this episode, I wanted to actually end all my episodes the same way. And it's going to go like this. I'm going to give you the moral of the story. But it won't be like some actual moral, like, be kind to everyone. Thou shalt not sin. Any of that crap. It's going to be like a fun, sarcastic one because that's what I'm all about. But basically, it's based off of this quote by George Santana. I don't know. It looks like Santa and then Yana. So Santa Yana. We're gonna go with that. Yep. I'm white. It's fine. White people can't pronounce anything. We just whitewash it all. Manifest destiny. Moving on. But he says, those who not remember the past are doomed to repeat it. So just full body chills every time. So basically, the moral of today's story is, one, not to live near a giant bucket of molasses. Do not trust men or governments who have large amounts of it. And three, if you're on jury duty and it's gonna last longer, if it's gonna last longer than a couple of months, fake your death, move to South America, and do some sketchy stuff. I'm out. This is Melissa, and you have listened to my first episode of Historically Sarcastic.